Okay, we're gonna get rolling. Welcome, everyone. Especially for anyone of you that don't know me, I'm Paul Sturm. I co-chair our Social Action Clearinghouse along with Dick Humphrey, who's making his way here. I know we've got several members of our Social Action group with us today, and I'm especially happy because this marks the start of what we're calling Social Justice Sundays. And our plan is that once a month, hopefully on the first Sunday of each month, we're going to have a different program about a social justice issue that's affecting our lives here in Baltimore and Maryland. So watch happenings and the order of service and the calendar for announcements about future social justice Sundays. We're going to do one, I know for sure, on health care. Dick's involved in setting that up. Another one on some of the challenges faced by ex-offenders here in Baltimore, and who knows what else.
We're also going to pick up some issues that Jill feels very strongly about, and that is in terms of peace and justice.
Okay.
If you want peace, look for justice. No,
that's right. If you want justice, look for peace. Either
one. Okay. So, without further ado, let me introduce Lisa Bardak. Lisa is an environmental writer and activist and scholar and teacher, and I'm just delighted that she could be with us today. She will tell us everything there is to know about fracking, maybe a little more than many of us knew before. And then we'll have a conversation based on the information Lisa shares with us about how we can get involved in the issue, which is right now before the Maryland legislature, I believe. So, Lisa, it's all yours.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here and for being here on Sunday, where free time is the most precious, to learn about a high-volume slickwater hydraulic fracturing, which is more easily referred to as fracking. But it is high-volume slickwater hydraulic fracturing, but I will not say that every time. I'll use the word fracking. It's a topic that may seem not necessarily a priority for the city of Baltimore with all the other issues that are pressing, but the truth of the matter is it's a very critical issue right now. We all use natural gas, and there's serious injustice and destruction happening right now where the gas is being extracted. And furthermore, the energy future of Maryland right now is on the brink of being decided. This legislative issue is critical, and we are the critical voices that are going to determine what the Maryland's energy future is all about. I do want to say that it was great to have Pete Seeger be part of that wonderful ceremony. I got all verklempt when we sang "Where Have All the Flowers Gone?" But Pete, of course, is an extraordinary figure. He is very involved. Up until the end, he was very involved in the issue of fracking in New York State, which parallels our own situation in Maryland, a moratorium we have now, soon to be lifted. And he sang up until the very end about it, and often singing, you know, this land is your land, this land is my land, and that's what this is all about. So I'm always grateful when I can present at a Unitarian church where social action is so deeply embedded in spiritual practice. And I know you're well attuned to the moral issues that cry out for attention when it comes to fracking. Our interdependence with the natural world, our need to care for the sacred living earth and the natural resources that sustain life, the right to economic and environmental justice for all, the fundamental spiritual principles of loving thy neighbor as thyself, very important one to me when it comes down to the issue of fracking. And our fundamental obligation to provide for children and for future generations a safe and viable future, which is a bit of a question mark right now. So my presentation tonight comes out about 3 years of being with fracking, studying fracking, being an activist, going to rallies, hearing people's stories. It's based on both scientific evidence and the authentic experiences of citizens who, throughout the United States, who are living where fracking is occurring. The more I learn about fracking, the more profoundly alarmed I am about its consequences. I've seen the destruction that fracking has caused to communities economically, environmentally, and socially. I've met people, many from our neighboring state of Pennsylvania, which I hold deeply in my heart right now, who live near fracking wells and are suffering from rashes that cover their bodies, headaches ringing in their ears, loss of smell, loss of taste, respiratory illnesses, including increased episodes of asthma, and serious neuropathy. Children who are suffering from nosebleeds, dizziness, nausea, who have passed out in the showers due to methane migration. People whose water has been contaminated, people who can light their water on fire, and this is not just for the documentary Gasland, there are many people who can light their water on fire, people who have lost the values of their homes and often their dreams. People like Carol French, who I have had the pleasure to meet. Carol lives in a dairy farm in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, which is being destroyed by fracking. And her dairy farm is surrounded by 9 wells. She does not drink the water. She only bathes in it. This is just a short testimony from Carol.
Well, my story is about my daughter. 2 weeks later, she ended up having a fever for 3 days. She had diarrhea, which turned to blood. She lost 10 pounds in 7 days. She begged me to take her home to the hospital to find out what was wrong. I took her to the hospital. They tested her urine and her blood. They found white blood cells in her urine, but not her blood. They did not know what was wrong with her. They just said that she might have urinary tract infection. 4 days later, the hospital called and said she did not. They did an MRI. They found free floating fluid. Did not know what was wrong with my daughter. My neighbor, her water changed the same time mine did. A month after her water changed in April, she had free-floating fluid in her system. Her spleen and her liver were very large. In 3 days, her spleen burst. You do not have the right to choose who is going to be sacrificed. I am not going to be sacrificed. I will stand by that. You can have my water, you can drink my water, but it is not worth all this money that you claim you're going to make.
It's interesting. When I go and I speak, people will say that stories like Carol's are anecdotal. But I've heard so many of them, and they are multiplying. And science, which takes time, is finally catching up and verifying that fracking contaminates water and air. Yet these citizens remain unheard and dismissed by the gas industry, actually often bought by the gas industry with non-disclosure agreements, so that they are, in order to get water into their homes, they sign an agreement that says they will not talk to state agencies, federal agencies, the press, no one, about what has happened to their homes and their health. Interesting tactics. And they are not heard by their local government and their federal government, which supposedly exists to protect them. So, to honoring the fundamental teaching of love thy neighbor as thyself, I hold these people that I have met in my heart as I speak with you today. So, we're going to start with just a basic understanding of what fracking is, and some of you may know, so please bear with me. Move on to the status of fracking in Maryland, and what the Cove Point Liquid Natural Gas Export Terminal in Southern Maryland means for the state. And then we'll take a quick look at the promising opportunity, the good stuff, that is there that we can, that we have to choose for a different energy path. And we'll talk about this at the end. The presentation is 30 minutes, so hang with me. So fracking is a new, unconventional natural gas extraction technology first developed in the late 1990s by Halliburton. It involves blasting a mixture of silica sand, fresh water, and chemicals vertically into wells, and then horizontally into casings that are created that can go as long as 2 miles, that is placed in shale rock a mile or so below the surface. The extreme pressure used to inject the fluid, extreme pressure, frees up, get natural gas trapped in the fissures in the shale and brings it back up to the surface. The casings, as you can see, sit below the aquifers. Now, fracking is happening throughout the United States, and specifically in our region, at a lightning pace, because we rest on a geological formation known as the Marcellus Shale. Some call it here the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. Yikes. Which hold within it an untapped supply of natural gas. Now, fracking uses massive amounts of fresh water from sources such as lakes, rivers, and streams, water that is permanently taken out of our fresh water supply forever. Though 70% of the Earth's surface is covered in water, it's less than 1% that's drinkable. And the drinkable water is a finite resource. The fresh water on Earth has been recycled for millions of years, continually circulating by way of divine design. The use of fresh water for fracking will only increase as the number of wells increase. And fracking also uses large quantities of silica sand, which, in reflecting on our roles in caring for the living Earth, is resulting in the permanent destruction of the beautiful bluffs, the rolling hills of states like Wisconsin, much like mountaintop removal. They're just blasting the hills off, destroying farms and subjecting residents, workers, and those living along the railroad lines to silica dust, a known carcinogen that can cause permanent and serious damage to the lungs. Lastly, fracking uses large quantities of highly toxic chemicals in the fracking fluid. This is just a fracking site. Here are all the chemicals waiting to be injected. Research conducted by the Endocrine Disruption Exchange to identify the chemicals used in fracking fluids through public knowledge, public records, and so on. They found that of the 360-plus chemicals identified in fracking fluid, 40% are endocrine disruptors, a third are suspected carcinogens, a third are developmental toxicants, and over 60% can harm the brain and nervous system. Through exposure by way of air and water, these chemicals are wreaking havoc on the health of citizens, not to mention ecosystems. Now, if that isn't enough, after the initial blast of fracking fluid into the well, approximately 30% of this chemical cocktail comes back up in the form of flowback or wastewater, which is then in need of being disposed of. It's creating tremendous amounts of this wastewater. In some cases, it's actually treated at water treatment plants, which I do find particularly frightening. Much of the fracking water gets sent to Ohio, and it's then blasted deep down into the earth where it supposedly stays. And of course, Ohio has been experiencing earthquakes as a result of these blasts right now, more and more. The remaining 70% of this flowback fluid that is in the casings, it remains in the casings, and by even the gas industry's own documentation, these casings will eventually corrode and rust. It could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, it could be 100 years. But it's simply impossible to keep these casings from deteriorating at some point. In addition to the toxic chemicals injected into the wells, the wastewater carries with it additional toxins that have been quietly resting in the shale for 370 million years, where they're supposed to stay. These include arsenic, lead, uranium, and radium-226. I have a short clip. With these videos that I'm showing clips of, the full videos are on the resource sheets that I gave you. This is a clip from James Northrup, who is who's been an investor in the gas and oil industry and very familiar with it. So just a word from him on what's in the shale.
These shale deposits are rich in radium. Radium-226. The level of radium in the Marcellus is about 267 times the safe disposal amount, meaning it'll kill you. So there's anecdotal evidence that these fracturers will leach uranium out of these shale deposits. There's also radon in these shale deposits. So in addition to the fracking fluid, which we know is toxic, the frack flowback leaches radium out of the shale. The radium is carcinogenic, and that's something that's being introduced to the surface in a spill that wasn't there before.
So, and it's also been known that in addition to the fluid, there's also drill cuttings, the more solid waste that comes out. And at times, it's actually been rejected from sites for being too radioactive.
Wait, what's been rejected?
The solid waste from the drilling process. So the mud and the cuttings that they also have to bring somewhere. They'll bring it to sites. And it has. There are instances where it's been rejected because it's too radioactive. Now, accidents happen, and fracking wastewater is ending up in streams and rivers due to blowouts at well sites, spills, flooding that washes out the open pits that we saw earlier where fracking wastewater initially is stored. Intentional dumping of the fluid by small contractors and truck accidents. Due to the thousands and thousands of trucks carrying lethal fluids moving back and forth along basic country roads that were never intended for this level of industrialization. To talk about the accidents, I have a brief clip from Professor Tony Ingraffia, who's one of the world's most, he's the leading pioneer on fracking mechanics. He worked in the natural gas industry for decades. He's currently a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Cornell University. His presentation is the first thing on the resource list. Like, if you're interested in getting, you know, I'm not a scientist, you want to hear from someone to back what I'm talking about, if you're going to listen to anything, listen to Professor Tony Graffia. But here's a small clip of him talking about accidents.
The estimate of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Preservation is one serious environmental concern for every 150 wells drilled to date. You do the math. If we're talking hundreds of thousands of wells, we're doing hundreds per thousands of spills. That's called cumulative impact. So it goes to the heart of your question, why are you not seeing all these things yet? Because the cumulative impact is accumulating. Come back in 10 years.
You know, when I think about that line, come back in 10 years, I think a lot about the Susquehanna River, which is both they're taking water from, but wastewater is going back into. Baltimore does draw from the Susquehanna during drought, and places like Havre de Grace use the water from the Susquehanna as their water source. Now, despite, this is always sort of a stunning phenomenon, but despite the toxic content of fracking fluid and wastewater, as well as serious air contamination, fracking is exempt from seven major federal environmental laws, including the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Water Act, and the Clean Air Act. Regulation of fracking, therefore, falls on the states, which are woefully inadequate to monitor fracking and at times as is the case with Pennsylvania, far too corrupt to monitor fracking operations. This is a small clip from a former worker.
The ecologist met with an ex-gas industry employee who described a spill on a site that he worked on.
Some of the sites are well regulated, yeah, with DEP and OSHA and stuff like that, where they're right on and stuff, yeah, they're well regulated. But the rest of the 95% of them, where they're not going to go out to the site and look at them, no. No, they're not well regulated. Some of them are real bad.
The rest of the 95% of them. Go ahead. I don't want to do too many questions till the end, but if you want to do something quick, because I just want to get through the presentation.
I understand. DEP, don't they come out and do your questions? Don't they test your site for upwards of like 30 chemicals, but they legally only have to disclose 16 or 17 of you?
I don't know the answer to that question. I know that that the fracking fluid is still considered proprietary, and that the natural gas industry is trying to put a clamp on anyone to speak specifically, including doctors in Pennsylvania who are now currently have a gag order not to reveal what chemicals are showing up in people's bloodstream. Now that's being fought because that's just ridiculous. That is lowering up, but I don't know the answer to that specifically. I just know that it's not working. Regulation is not working. And when he says the rest of the 95% of the people have a hard time, the Department of Environmental Protection in Pennsylvania has doctored, and I thought you guys might work for Clean Water Act or something. You know, they've doctored the rock, they've lied about the results. Pennsylvania is a bought state, and I don't say that in every place I do a presentation, but I can say it here. So, but they are bought. Governor Corbett is a gem. So obviously, though, the natural gas industry will tell you that natural gas is clean, they're only referring to the point of combustion. It's clean here. But obviously, the entire process, it's far from clean. So it's time to start looking up instead of down. Yeah. So now on to what's happening in Maryland. So the gas industry is currently interested in fracking in Western Maryland, which sits along the Marcellus Shale, and they've already leased large areas of land in Garrett and Allegheny counties awaiting the state's approval to frack. Now, aware of the hazardous effects of fracking in neighboring states, O'Malley put out an executive order for a moratorium in June of 2011. The executive order established a study commission made up of a range of stakeholders that, along with the Maryland Department of the Environment and the Department of Natural Resources, is tasked with developing baseline studies and analyzing the potential impacts from fracking with regard to economics, the environment, and public health. The commission completed a draft of best management practices first, which is interesting, and they just completed a draft of the public health impacts. The environmental and economic reports are in progress, and they're all due before the moratorium expires in August of 2014. So the moratorium expires this summer. So Maryland citizens who are deeply concerned about fracking want to make sure that the Maryland legislature supports a fracking, supports a moratorium on fracking in this current legislative session to ensure that we don't rush into a critical decision until all the studies are complete and analyzed. Not just complete, but truly analyzed. It's important to know that there are citizens in Maryland, in Western Maryland, who do want fracking, who need the royalties. You know, they want them and they need them, and they're willing to gamble and see if they'll end up with water safe enough to drink and bathe in, and air clean enough to breathe. So why not just let them decide for themselves, which is what a lot of people think. It's just going to happen out in Western Maryland. Well, the fracking game has changed dramatically with the possibility of a liquid natural gas export facility in Lesby, Maryland, in southern Maryland, which involves industrial plants on a massive scale that will impact this entire state. Dominion Resources of Virginia currently owns the Cove Point liquid natural gas import facility on the shores of Southern Maryland, which is currently dormant. They're proposing to invest $3.8 billion to turn this terminal into an export facility. What they want to do is they want to take the natural gas being fracked in the Marcellus Shale, transport it through Maryland, liquefy the gas in a highly intensive energy process, and then ship it overseas to Asia, where it goes through an entire process, then to be sent back through pipelines to people's homes. Though the liquid natural gas the facility has not yet been approved, and this is where we all play a role, Dominion has already contracted 80% of its gas to Japan and India for the next 20 years. So that contract is already signed. So what does it mean for Maryland? The one thing it means, pumping massive amounts of fracked gas through already existing pipelines, some of them very old, as well as building untold new pipelines through the state. By Dominion's accounts, they're planning on pumping, and I find this figure just stunning. They're planning on pumping 770 million cubic feet of natural gas per day. Well, what's that, 770 million cubic feet? It's four times what all of Maryland uses in one day. So every day, four times of what Maryland uses in one day is going to go through these pipelines down to Cove Point. In addition to the pipelines, they need to build compressor stations throughout the state to keep the gas flowing through Maryland down to Cove Point. And Myersville, Maryland right now, which is near Frederick, has been fighting the construction of a 16,000 horsepower compressor station in their town, which is located less than 1 mile from the town's elementary school. This is the first compressor station in the upcoming industrial build-out of Cove Point, though Dominion will tell you otherwise, but it is. The Myersville Town Council voted unanimously against the compressor station. Dominion sued Myersville and won. Through all this permit rigmarole, however they get away with these things. I'm not articulate on it, but I have a link to that group of citizens. Citizens of Myersville are struggling for their right to safety and clean air. Based on Dominion's calculations, this compressor station alone would emit 23.5 tons of nitrogen oxide per year, a precursor to smog and hazardous to human health, especially those with asthma. Maryland is already rated one of the worst states in the United States for air quality, which is a sad thought that I try to block out, but it's true. We don't need more of this. Also critical to Cove Point is methane leakage. Even the gas industry admits that methane leaks throughout the fracking process, from flaring at the well pads to the storage facilities, from the compressor stations to the pipelines. This is just a clip from a video of two people who are living in Pennsylvania, and just an example of a quick bit on methane leakage.
What do you think is coming out of those compressor stations? They leak it like crazy. How many of those pipelines do you think are 100% leak-proof?
We looked at our well through an infrared camera, and we could see the emissions coming off that.
It looked like a smokestack. Nothing coming out of it.
That's just one well.
So the EPA has made a very conservative estimate that at least 1.4% of methane is leaking into the atmosphere from the entire fracking operation cycle. Now, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which just came out with their most recent report, methane is 84 times more powerful at trapping heat in the atmosphere than CO2 over a 20-year period. So obviously, at a time when we're facing the inevitable consequences of climate change, and we've only just begun, as Karen Carpenter would say, allowing excessive amounts of methane to to enter the atmosphere is an absolutely ludicrous idea. Maryland, with its extensive coastal areas, our harbor included, is one of the most vulnerable states in the United States when it comes to climate change and sea level rise. We need to be curbing the rise of sea levels, not contributing to it. Now this slide, I don't know exactly what the year, oh, it's 2012, this shows methane leakage in Boston from natural gas pipes. I don't know if anybody saw, but there was an article just a couple weeks ago that came out, I think, in the Post. They found 6,000 methane leaks in Washington, D.C. So no doubt, pipes are leaking everywhere. It's old infrastructure. Of course, we love infrastructure, to jobs to be created through infrastructure, but we certainly don't need more fracked gas. Now, pipelines have the potential to rupture, causing dangerous explosions and fires. There have been at least three such explosions in other states in recent months. That Canada just had a huge one that could be seen for 40 miles. Dominion's also going to need to build a 130-megawatt power plant for the liquefaction process, which uses massive amounts of fracked gas to operate and will contaminate the air for residents of Lesby, Maryland, who may have to breathe it. The liquid natural gas facility will also draw a surge of 85 additional 1,000-foot tankers into the Chesapeake Bay each year. In addition to carrying volatile, potentially explosive liquid fuel, and I know this is, you know, this is no song and dance, and I'm almost done with the bad news, so I promise I'll stop. These tankers will worsen local air quality by spewing nasty bunker fuel at unregulated levels into the air, which of course also ends up in the bay. And they'll also be dumping millions of gallons of dirty ballast water into the nearby Atlantic waters and the fragile Chesapeake Bay. Ballast water often introduces invasive species that wreak havoc on the bay. Lastly, and most people believe this who are following this, right? if the Dominion is able to build this export facility, fracking will happen in Maryland because the economic pressure will be too great, and given the amount, the quantity of gas that they want to put out, and the enticement to landowners for money is going to be hard to pass up. You know, but the question is, at what cost? And one of the things that's talked about is, okay, so here's, you know, we have the Marcellus, but these are also basins that are deeper down into the ground where there's fracked gas. They are already talking about this Taylorsville Basin, which runs through Charles, Prince George's, and Anne Arundel counties. So I don't think the natural gas industry was saying, well, those are too deep and we're not going to frack there. If you have an export facility, I'm sure that they'll be fracking wherever they can frack, they'll be fracking. now, despite this massive industrial undertaking, Cove Point, the Federal Environmental Regulatory Commission has agreed with Dominion that an environmental impact statement is not necessary. Okay, they're doing an environmental assessment, but they don't feel it's necessary to do a more thorough environmental impact statement because one was done when it was an import facility, so they're saying, well, that'll do. The difference between an import facility and export facility is like night and day, or as I thought of recently, like Rush Limbaugh and Elizabeth Warren. Clearly, this makes no sense. In the Baltimore Sun, environmental and health groups statewide, citizens from Lesby all the way to Maryland, Western Maryland, have come together in demanding that an EIS be conducted, and that's one of the actions that I'm going to be encouraging you to do, to help with. Attorney General Doug Gansler has joined in this demand with a formal letter to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission calling for a proper EIS. And the Chesapeake Climate Action Network is now trying to get Senators Cardin and Mikulski on board to insist on an EIS. Lastly, as for the energy independence argument about frack gas being good for energy independence, The rush to drill for natural gas will not make us energy independent. For one thing, we don't use natural gas for transportation, but more importantly, the gas industry is focusing on exporting gas. So that's what's happening right now. There are currently 21 permits on the table for liquid natural gas export facilities along the U.S. coast. So none of them exist yet. This is brand new. They've just realized, okay, gas is costs three times as much in Asia as it does here in the United States. Of course, the gas industry is focused first and foremost on profit. So creating demand for cheaper natural gas from the United States by shipping it over there. If we allow natural gas to be exported, the cost of natural gas in the United States will change. The U.S. Department of Energy concluded that liquid natural gas exports would raise domestic costs for natural gas and harm every sector of the U.S. economy, every sector except for the gas industry. And it's interesting because even companies like Dow and DuPont are partnering in this effort to stop the exporting of natural gas because it will be too expensive for them. So anyway, it's a lot of information to take in. I sort of try to push that fracking information to as short a presentation as I can. It's not a rosy picture by any means, but the good news is that Maryland is at a crossroads and the decision on our energy future is not yet determined and is ours to make. So currently, the Maryland legislature has embraced a commitment to 20% clean electricity from sources like wind and energy by 2022. What the Chesapeake Climate Action Network and others are proposing is to double that to 40% by 2025. And it's really doable. And what it means for Maryland is jobs, protecting public health, our natural resources, and less climate pollution when we need it most. And I have a sense everybody here is for renewable energy. Wind is Maryland's indigenous energy. It's plentiful. And the wind industry actually wants to manufacture the wind turbines in Maryland, which means jobs. They're massive. These cannot be produced in China and sent over. They're gigantic. And it would be an incredible opportunity for Maryland. Solar and wind are plummeting in cost. Solar's down 80% since 2008 and 20% in 2012 alone. So the costs are going down and down. And we have an opportunity as a state to set an example for the rest of the country. All eyes in this country of those of us who are involved in stopping liquid natural gas movements and so on, and fracking. Their eyes are on Maryland, both for the moratorium and stopping Cove Point. So before I close, I know this reinforces what you already know, but I want to just close with a video before we get to the resources and action. A short piece from a video called On Faith and Fracking, which features leaders of faith from New York State. New York State is facing the exact same situation that Maryland is. They have a moratorium, it's about to be lifted, and they're going to make the decision. And that's why I'm going to places of faith right now, because this is truly such a deep moral issue.
Regardless of what faith tradition you come out of, we have been told that this, all of creation, is ours to take care of, to be stewards of.
It interests me that the Bible, the Torah from the end, begins with the story of creation, which is really not about science. There are two stories of creation. It's really about day one, day two, day three. It's really like a calendar, a division of time, and understanding the creation that way. But it's the second story of creation about the Garden of Eden that interests me there. That, in fact, there was a garden, that the earth is a garden, and Adam was placed in the garden to tend the garden. Our tradition teaches us that we are guardians of the creation. That is to say, we're supposed to guard the garden. That's the source of our food and our water. We can't live without the earth and without clean water and clean air.
Scientists say that the 21st century
is going to be the century of water. Scarce water. One of the rare treasures of upstate New York is our abundant, deep aquifers and rivers and lakes and wetlands. Are we going to jeopardize that at the very time when we begin to see that that may be the most needed resource for our children and their children? No, we cannot do that.
To threaten using up our finite supply of fresh water, ever dwindling with global warming and overpopulation, by polluting it with toxic chemicals, some known carcinogens, is unconscionable.
We can't say for sure what will happen with hydrofracking, but there's enough incidents out there for us to be terribly concerned, and it's one of those situations where if we're wrong about it being bad, we don't lose as much, but if we're right about it being bad, we lose our water, and there's no getting that back.
There's just too many big questions. There's plenty of scientific information that this is a dangerous practice. It will harm people. It has harmed people. We really need to take into consideration of what we're leaving future generations who will not benefit economically, but will have to carry the environmental costs of hydrofracking.
I tend to view all issues like fracking from the lens of religious issues that are about how we comport ourselves as human beings, how we have a relationship to the world we live in, meaning the people in the world and the physical world. How am I going to be more fulfilled as a human being? And it's not by pillaging. It's not by taking advantage of it. It's not by exploitation. And in this case, the environment is being exploited and has been in ways that are dangerous. And I think fracking fits into that kind of exploitation. And I think ultimately brings harm.
We're all connected. You can't pluck something out of this web, this tapestry, without it affecting everyone. We can't make the fight be about the environment and not about also the economic justice. We aren't just responsible for the earth, we are responsible for each other. We're supposed to take care of the lesser among us.
If we really want to make choices that are moral and good, we have to look at how do we stand with people who don't have a voice, who are affected by the decision, but aren't being included in the decision.
So, and that video is also on the resource sheet. So, the resource sheet that I've given you, I want to say one thing about that right off the bat. I don't like people to leave without material in their hands, but in the top right corner, you'll see my email address, lisabardak@yahoo.com. And I don't use that list for anything other, but if you email me, I will send you an electronic copy, and then all the links are just live and you can click on it, because you can see the links are elaborate on the resource sheet. Do you have the resource sheet? Here, are there people who don't have the resource sheet? Okay, let me just get them to you. It has,
thank you.
Sure. Who is in there? One more back there? So, if you get
you're short on copies, we can make some copies.
Yeah, no, okay, good. But that way the links can be live, and you don't have to worry, you know. But there's valuable information in there. In the other packet, and I'll have to get those out, I think, to people as well who may not have gotten that. There's a piece of paper in there that asks you to write a letter to Governor O'Malley, insisting that Dominion have to do an environmental impact statement. That's all we're asking, and the thing about it is, if they have to do an EIS and it's done, chances of it going through are slim, because the amount of environmental harm it's going to cause is hopefully apparent. It's interesting, but handwritten letters are the most powerful form of communication with elected officials. So if you handwrite a letter, ask a friend to hand, it doesn't have to be long. You could say, I'm a citizen from Maryland, and and I'm asking you, please insist on an EIS. Yeah.
So I'm a developer. We're looking to build, some outlet malls in Montgomery County, Clarksburg area. which we're going to have some significant impact on Ten Mile Creek, which is the last pristine source of drinking water around that area. We've got over 1,000 handwritten letters on them, and it went from having 2 to 6 county council members supporting the environmental public health view to bumping it up to almost all of them, 5 out of 6.
Isn't that so great that in this age where everyone's walking around looking at their phones and so on, that a handwritten letter has the greatest impact? I like that. I have a petition that I can pass around that Chesapeake Climate Action Network is asking Governor O'Malley to stop Cove Point. So if you know for a fact already that you don't want, I'm sorry, there's some pages from another time I talked. Oh goodness. You know what, I may need to get more pages, but of that, now that I think of it, I forgot to copy more of those. So there's a petition to be signed. On February 20th, in downtown Baltimore, they are trying to have as big a rally as humanly possible during lunchtime. It's from noon to 1:30 at the War Memorial Plaza in downtown Baltimore.
It's right across from City Hall, right?
That's right. And they blocked off a small area that we're going to gather and then march around. I apologize to my agency, but I forget which specific agency they're focusing on that's also right there that has to do with energy regulation. So we're trying to get as many people down so we know, so they know that we know what's going on. Because it's fascinating. Dominion Resources really thought that this was just going to be like, all right, we're good. And they have their ways of doing, like, small compressor station here, they make it small enough so it doesn't have to follow a certain regulation, and they segment it and do little things all along the way, and then they were ready to build in the spring. Mm-hmm. But we're slowing them down. Chesapeake Climate Action Network, ChesapeakeClimate.org, if you're interested in just getting the action alerts, finding out what's going on, they are doing an outstanding job. We have formed a larger committee beyond Chesapeake Climate Action Network all across the state of organization that are fighting this, so the committee is growing and getting bigger, we're getting the swelling, but they're terrific for getting action alerts and information on what's going on with Cove Point. Those are among, a letter to Governor O'Malley. Come to the rally if you can. Bring friends. Get friends to write letters to Governor O'Malley.
So are there any members of the state legislature that are important in this decision? And if so, would it be of value if those of us that know legislators were to be in touch with them as well?
Cardin and Mikulski are two people we're interested in stepping up on. Heather Majeure is very much involved in this. Those are the two that I know of, but that CCAN is targeting.
Well, is it Governor O'Malley's decision alone, or the legislature have any influence?
This is the EIS is not a legislative issue the way the moratorium is. So the moratorium is big this year. If the moratorium doesn't happen, now this is my understanding is that two of the three candidates are leaning toward fracking, opening the state up to fracking.
Which are?
I'm spacing out on the names. Doug Gansler, who's running?
Anthony Brown.
Anthony Brown and
Gansler.
And Gansler,
Heather Majeure is the other Democrat.
Heather Majeure is working hard for a moratorium. The other two are leaning more toward opening the state up to fracking than not.
Yeah. What about the Republican candidates? Do you know where they stand? It may be a rhetorical question.
It is a rhetorical question, but it's okay.
Are any of them likely to oppose, or are they all likely to support?
A really good question. Right now, it's just beginning. The lobbying is just beginning. I don't know. I think more people than not are in favor of opening the state up to fracking. The departments involved in making the reports they did best management practices first. And they feel that there is a safe way to do fracking in Maryland if you put certain safeguards in. Based on what I've talked about, turning the quantities of water being used, quantity of waste being generated, the radioactive materials and lead and arsenic, there's no way that it's safe. Now, you know, do we stop natural gas tomorrow? Obviously not. I heat my home with natural gas, but you know, we want to use less energy. And we also, if it's possible, need to get the natural gas industry to invest some money in making it a safe practice, which it once was. A safer practice until we continue to make the bridge to renewable energies and finally get to that place.
Yeah, the fracking, the additives to the water to make it slick water, you know, people are under the impression that this is something like dishwater detergent added to the water.
That's right.
But, you know, since it's secret and proprietary what's going into there, I mean, it just leaves me thinking that there's some kind of hazardous waste that couldn't be disposed of anywhere on Bone Spring Earth, that they were secretly putting that into the fracking possibly even being paid to receive it and get rid of it.
Oh, Ohio. I mean, Ohio is just putting it all underground. I just can't imagine what Ohio is going to be like years and decades from now. Right. It's proprietary. And when they testify, they say, oh, we use this. It's kind of like what you've got in your dish soap, and we use this. And it's kind of like what you find in a derivative in coffee beans or what have you. But clearly, the Endocrine Disruption Exchange, the work that they did, which has also been cited in congressional hearings, congressional studies, blatantly shows this is an incredibly toxic fluid.
How on earth did it happen that this is not covered by federal regulations, Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act?
Well, the oil and gas industry has always had exemptions from federal law because the gas and oil industry rules the world. And that's a bold statement on my part. But anyway, but the Safe Drinking Water Act, when fracking fluid occurred, Dick Cheney was the president of Halliburton. He became, in 2005, the Vice President of the United States of America, and in 2005 made fracking exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act. Nice move. The Halliburton loophole. That's right. And we have been trying to have Congress get rid of the Halliburton loophole. And we still, it was a frack act, have not been able to get it through.
But when they come out and have these talks about, I'm talking about the industry, comes out and has these talks about, the positive side of it, that everybody knows better, how come they don't have anybody challenging them?
Well, people are challenging them in smaller ways, but in mainstream media, definitely not. The ads that are up are all from the gas industry. They're probably gonna advertise the Super Bowl.
Seems like to me that's what we're gonna need, short of knocking off people.
Yeah. But it's hard to compete.
Showing up in one of their meetings.
I don't know, when you were in Pennsylvania, I was in Pittsburgh for a little bit, and the Range Resource commercials were crazy. It was just like,
stunning.
They gave all the, I forgot who gave all that money for the new stadium in Pittsburgh, but it was one of them, and just like the Range Resource, like, do you love America? Range does.
You get off the plane in Pittsburgh, and it's right there where the escalator is down to the luggage, because they started drilling on it at the airport. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I will say, I will say, because of the internet, because of social media, the movement is growing extraordinarily. You've gone from state organizations to a highly coordinated national Americans Against Fracking. There are regular conference calls. You have large environmental organizations that are coming together to at least create a stir. We're doing civil disobedience at times, getting arrested, but can we get into the mainstream media? I don't think it's hard. The money, it's hard to come by. There's been they bought ads. I mean, Yoko Ono bought a full page ad in the New York Times, but that only
goes. We need more education of people because I mean, you have so many people just in this area who have respiratory disease, such as myself. I have asthma, COPD, and I mean, even with the air that we have here, there's a problem for me. My God, you have those emissions in the air. I'm gone. It's just the end of me, and
sure not full of people, you know, in my home. Well, Lesby, Maryland. I mean, they already have tough air. The ones who are down where Cove Point is. You know, I have to say what they get, it's so absurd, it's funny. One of the things that Dominion is saying is they're going to build a wall, a sound wall, because it's going to be so noisy, oh my God. It's going to be as tall as the Lincoln Memorial. Like, it's a sound wall they're going to put up to keep the sound from going into the community. I thought that was funny.
They don't work.
At Sparrow's Point, when they were importing LNG, they didn't make any provision for LNG to be available to anyone in Maryland, like for as a motor fuel or for any other purpose. Also, they didn't tax it for going through Maryland. It was Louisiana-style transfer tax pipeline through through the state. And apparently, this they're not making any provisions that must be known that people have who use compressed natural gas that they can like get compressed natural gas from their vehicles there either. Mm-hmm. And again, since some of the most of the pipeline through Maryland is coming through Maryland, apparently completely untaxed Louisiana style there either.
Lisa, we need to wrap up in just a moment or two. Is there a place where people could sign up to get updates about what's happening? And is there anything else that any of us could do beyond being in touch with the governor and perhaps the members of the other elected officials as well?
So again, CCAN, Chesapeake Climate Network is the most involved in the actions being taken. They're trying not to be the only organization. So we're working on forming the Maryland Emergency Committee on Cove Point, which has about 20 organizations in it right now. So, because they're just like, oh, it's just one organization. But CCAN is excellent. That would be the organization I would recommend for action updates. Again,
is their website on your material?
The website is on material. Again, if you email me at lisabarrett@yahoo.com, I won't use that for anything other than send you an electronic copy of the resource sheet that I gave you so the links are live. Are there people who did not get this packet that also has the information from CCAN and on the letter to O'Malley that have the resource sheet but not this packet? Did everybody get this packet as well? Okay. So, you know, I really appreciate you being here. I hope that you can speak to other people. This is happening right now. And the moratorium on fracking, which CCAN will also be involved in, this must happen this legislative session. If it doesn't, the state will be open to fracking, and we are setting an example. I think Vermont, and now we're not banning it as much as many of us would like to, just to get a moratorium, extend it, let the truth come out. And that's what the gas industry doesn't want, because the longer you wait, the more science is able to catch up with studies and say, this is definitely not safe.
Now, is there any way to talk to our counterpoint on the more conservative Republican side about this? Because the thing that where they come from is money, obviously, economy and jobs. Is there any way that we can talk to them about possibly privatizing? I honestly want to ban it. But if we talk about saying, if we're going to impact the state, if we're going to be taking our natural resources away, why don't we reap the benefits of it? Because right now all it's doing is going to another company rather than going towards the citizens of the state.
That's a perspective to think about. I mean, for me, I don't want... you're talking about all that gas being pumped through the state. The amount of methane leakage will be insane. How do you talk to them? For me?
Yeah.
I'm going to places of faith. I'm trying to get to more conservative places to reflect on the basic moral, spiritual principles, such as love thy neighbor as thyself. What does that mean, reflecting on those sorts of things, our obligation to children and future generations? What does that mean? Can you bring them along? You know, I don't know, you know, but as much groundswell as you can. Privatizing, you know, that's... it's something that someone could do if they chose to, but I think the fact that we are poisoning children, poisoning water, poisoning air, And you don't even have to do climate change. You know, sometimes when I'm talking, if I'm talking to somebody's concerned, I go, I'm going to say the word climate change now, and you know, go like this. This is Tony Graffin. Go like this if you don't want to hear that word. You know, if you don't believe that climate change is happening. But you know, I mean, I don't know if there's a ground there. I think the moral issues are the talking points on that.
I think they think about the trickle-down theory for everything.
They do.
I think what this needs, I'm a landscape historian, and I have old books and garden magazines. Up through the 50s, you'll see ads for DDT.
Right.
It was as part of the popular culture as Lysol is for us. And it took a Rachel Carson to really do that. And I think fracking needs a Rachel Carson.
Well, Sandra Steingraber is the Rachel Carson for the fracking movement. I don't have her name on here. She is extraordinary. She is out of New York State. She has been a leader in this movement. Her name is Sandra Steingraber. New Yorkers Against Fracking is her organization. She's an industrial cancer survivor, a scientist. Who, when she got bladder cancer living out in the farmlands, and they said, well, what's the history in your family? And she said, well, my aunt has cancer, my cousin has cancer, my other aunt has cancer, and by the way, I'm adopted. They didn't have a language yet to understand that environmental factors cause cancer, and it was still the Maryland Environmental Health Network is trying to educate more and more of the population. So she recognized that somewhat she had to get out of the labs and into the public. She got a master's in creative writing at Harvard. And she is just an eloquent speaker. I know she's coming to Loyola on February 13th to speak about writing. But Sandra Steingraber is the Rachel Carson of this movement. And we do need them, but it's tough to be up against the gas industry. The more of us that get involved, the better. So.
Okay, well, please join me in thanking Lisa both for her really wonderful work and for joining us in Christian Sharing today. Thank all of you for being with us, and I'm guessing if you have additional questions, you can hang around for a few minutes.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much for coming. Spread the word.
Yeah, let me show you.
Okay. You're a very good speaker. No.
Thank you.
You got a lot of information.
Yeah. Yes.
Very well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.